listeners, I am here with Peter Trinn from the cast of The Oldest Boy at Vintage Theater, and we're going to talk a little bit about the show and about some of the spiritual and religious aspects of it. And so, hi, Peter.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I want to start. So, you told me you are a Buddhist, and everybody else from the cast is not. So, let's start with, tell us about the show in a very quick...
So, really quick synopsis. A Caucasian woman married to a Tibetan man. They have a 3-year-old boy, and one day two monks show up at their door and tell them that they believe that their son is the embodiment of a reincarnated lama, specifically one of the monks' teachers. And so the two have to kind of reconcile, and mostly the Caucasian mother has to, who's kind of married into this religion, has to come to terms with what reincarnation means to her, and, you know, they... If he passes, they will take him to India to raise him and teach him as a high-ranked lama. And she, pretty much to her, she has to give up her child, and she has to come to terms with what that means to her. And if she's able to do that and honor her husband and her husband's religion.
Cool. And so, as a Buddhist, do you feel like the script is fairly accurate to the tradition?
Yeah, very much so. I practice Zen Buddhism.
Zen Buddhism.
So, which is a Vietnamese practice, which has direct ties to Tibetan Buddhism. Mm-hmm. And it's some people believe Tibetan Buddhism was like the first.
Okay.
And so I think it's very poignant and correct. A lot of research done by the cast and the director to make sure. We had one of the puppeteers, Dipali, she's from India. She's very well traveled and has spent time in Tibet, speaks a little bit Tibetan, and she was a good consultant for things.
Cool. So I noticed there's some tiny little things that happen here and there in the show, and so they were all actually researched. It's not just stage description. Like, for example,
yes.
At the very beginning, the mother, played by Candace Joyce, takes a moment before her meditation and breathes into one nostril and then out the other, which is a part of the, I want to say it's pranayama.
Right.
Breathing. And so that was all research, so it's not just do this in the script. Everybody got a chance to listen and learn a little bit more about what they were doing and why they were doing it.
Right, and there is me and Rob, who play the monks, we actually speak some Tibetan that's actually scripted, and we had a consultant for that, too.
Mm-hmm.
Just actually went to a Tibetan grocery store and asked him to... record saying the lines, and Rob went out and did that, and sent it out to everybody, so, you know, we could make sure that we were authentic and accurate.
Cool. Now, in Western religions, and I guess in the West in general, the attachment to this world, so this show is a lot about choice and attachment to family. Obviously, mom and dad are dealing with the fact that they need to let go of their son.
Mm-hmm.
And so can you talk a little bit about attachment?
Right, this is very interesting. I mean, and Sarah Rule really tips her hat the idea of duality and non-being, and how, and really the practice of Buddhism is detachment.
Mm-hmm.
Learning to detach yourself from material things and things like that. And and even in the play, they talk really well about it. But the monks and the mother have a conversation about attachment parenting, and she actually shows them a book how she's reading about attachment parenting, and the lama has a really interesting line about how, well, maybe there's a problem in the way we're understanding in the translation, but attachment is uncomfortable and it's grasping, and so attachment is not letting go, because if you're attached to something, then there's going to be suffering to come from that, because you're relying on your relationship with that attachment to maintain. And of course, nothing is consistent. The only thing that's consistent is inconsistency or always a state of change. You know, so if you're attached to something, you'll always be fighting that.
And we have just been joined by Dipali Lindblom and Kenneth Burba. And let's back up a bit and have you both tell us about your faith traditions, what faith traditions you come from.
When my mother, actually it all started with my mother. She was a Hindu, and she lived in Darjeeling, and then the missionaries came, and she was studying in the school, and at 16, she decided she wanted to be a Catholic. And so she converted into Catholicism, and then she was disowned by her father because she was a Christian now. And then for 2 years, while she was studying nursing, she didn't see her parents, her father, and her siblings, and no one. She had no one. And then after 2 years, and she would pray for them, and she would write letters, but no response. After 2 years, her father says that, come home. We all have been converted.
What?
To Catholicism. So my mother was the one who was converted her entire village and region into Christianity. And also because at that point of time, we're talking about in the 1940s, when 30s and 40s, no, 40s, when British had come and there were a lot of missionaries, and a lot of them came to Darjeeling. So that's where, and then when she met my father, he was a Hindu, which is the most prominent religion in India. And he promised that if my mother married him, he will convert, which she did not. And so when we were born, there was always a tussle at home because he wanted to raise us in Hinduism and my mother wanted to raise us in, as Catholics. Mm-hmm. But the good thing was that my father wasn't home because he was in the military, so he would come home only 2 months in a year. So, but we grew up very much influenced by Islam, Hinduism, Catholics, of course, because we studied also in a Catholic convent, Jainism, and Buddhism.
Okay.
And then something happened that made me an atheist.
Oh, interesting.
Because in the 90s, the Hindu fundamentalists in India, because they wanted to get votes and because there's so many ignorant people and uneducated people, started a drive to convert people back to Hinduism. Mm. And that created a lot of strife between Islamic people, Muslim people, and Hindu people. And that killed tens of thousands of people in my area because there was Ayodhya, there was the temple. And that I could not understand as a young 10-year-old why that happened. And so I became an atheist. Yes, for the longest time I was an atheist until I went to university, and then I went to the other extreme of becoming a born-again Christian.
Oh. Wow.
But as a born-again Christian, I could not digest few things, and also because I was been so different, I think a little more differently than the rest of Indians, and I believed that there has to be another way. And then finally I decided that I'm not going to follow any religion, but what the only truth actually Buddhism says, because I studied a lot of Buddha, Jesus, and Krishna. These are the three people I really, really admire of what they brought into this world. But I believe what Buddha says, that your experience is the only truth. Hmm. And today I'll try to live with that. Even though my family has, my mother is a devout Catholic still, my father is a Hindu, but sometimes he's a Catholic or a Christian. My sister is a very devout Christian, and her husband is a pastor. And my younger sister is also a very devout Christian and a pastor. And my father's family is all Hindu. My mother's family is all Christian. And my husband and we just follow that our experiences are truth. And that is what I try to live by today.
Oh. And now you did a lot of teaching in this show because you're familiar with India. And did the show influence your religion at all, how you see things, anything of your spirituality?
If nothing else, it has consolidated what I have, what I believe.
Okay.
When you see so much misery and you see so much, on the other hand, so much richness, you just must wonder why people are born where they're born. Mm-hmm. And I have to believe that we are all, as the Lama said in the play, that your soul is actually conscious that lives through many lives, and you have to learn what they have to. And actually, I just realized one thing, because I'm reading this book by Paul Brunton. He was a spiritual reader who came to India and lived many years, and I've written such good books. And I'm reading A Hermit in the Himalayas. It's all about Tibetan Buddhism and Christianity, and he's finding these threads. And I myself have started, had a very spiritual awakening this spring, and I'm still going, and I know today that what my purpose is. What it says that even the Christians believe that there is life and death they talk about. But the death is many times we live. We die many times. But in the end, when we live, when we have taken away all the layers and our soul is pure, it lives forever. It's just that they believe only in one life. That's the only difference.
Hmm.
But for me, it doesn't make sense. You have to learn. And I feel in my heart that this is another sojourn in my soul's journey.
And Kenneth, tell us about your background. So you both play puppeteers of the oldest boy.
Yes.
And then you appear as the oldest boy later.
Yes.
So tell us about your tradition.
Well, now I consider myself as agnostic. Yeah, I grew up in a fairly Christian Baptist household. My parents were born in the Philippines, so there's a very strong Christian upbringing. And yeah, just I remember just going to Sunday school. I recall not really connecting to it. Well, for one, I thought the sermons were long and boring, but at the end of each service, like, the pastor would say, like, join this or join that. And then it felt like a promise that I couldn't make. Just something that I didn't want to commit my life to. And so I didn't really like seem much against it. Like, I wasn't the rebellious type, so I just like kind of followed. And then once I graduated high school, just never really went to church. Yeah, I guess I'll just stay true to myself and just listen to what my soul says.
Well, what did you learn from this experience and still continue to learn as the show goes on, especially playing the boy who is reincarnated Lama? Like, did it challenge your beliefs? Did it shift anything for you? Did it bring you peace in your choices?
I view my role as I am one of a whole. In the show, I control the legs. But yeah, I'm still whole with the character, and I certainly respect their belief about reincarnation. I find it fascinating, the notion of reincarnation, because from a scientific point of view, actually we are all recycled material from other living things. However, everything cycles through life and death, through the changing of seasons. I find it quite fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you said something there about being a part of the whole, and I think there's a theme in the show about once Tenzin is born, he belongs to the world. So you're part of the leg. You do the legs, but you're also part of the whole puppeting of the three-year-old.
Yes.
So you mean like inclusiveness, how we're all part of the whole, we're all one.
I think a line in the show, as Lama says, we're like a necklace. Each of our lives is a bead living independently, but we're all connected by a strand, and that strand is consciousness. You know, I think the question of death, it becomes very prominent, and every religion has its own beliefs. But nobody knows, right? You know, and I feel like there is positivity to believe that there's more, you know, that it just doesn't end. And being Buddhist, I strongly believe in reincarnation and this idea that when we die, we go back to the whole and we're all part of this same kind of large consciousness. And when we are birthed, we are rebirthed, we focus ourselves back to this plane where we can have experiences and relationships. And that's when that strain of consciousness grows with every life, with every bead that it builds on, and it becomes part of this bigger whole that you are, you know? And we can't see it now because we're separated from all the other beads, all the other lives, but the more that we can connect to our consciousness as a whole, I think that's where peace is, and that's where love is.
I will have to say something more to this because I have a two-year-old, and also with the whole thing of coming back into life. Now, I married a Swede, and Swedes are not religious in any aspect. But my mother-in-law, she's very spiritual. When I say spiritual, it means she believes in the spirit of the universe and the spirit of being on the other side. And she told me once when we've had long discussions that we choose how we will be born. where we will be born, what time will we be born, and in what capacity, and what lesson would I have to learn in this life. So we come already with a plan. And that's why sometimes when you see something that you feel like it's a deja vu, actually it's your soul's way of recognizing that you're on the path that you're supposed to be. And deep down inside, it's true. And only now that I have a child, I'm beginning to learn and understand that you and see the why you're born. And even my son, I see that he comes from the time he started to walk, he started showing who he was. He's no more in our control. So he is a world's child. He is over there. I was just a medium to bring him into this world. I can give him the love. I can give him the understanding and my experiences of what I've learned. But he will walk his own path. And that as parents, I will. So if I were, but maybe it's easy for me to say because I'm from India and I've been Eastern religion philosophy where we are sharing that we don't own children in a way, which is such a paradox. If I were told that your son would be a priest, or I would say it is his choice. Mm-hmm. And if he chooses to, then I will give my blessings. It will be painful. And I think that's what you see in the end. It all sums up when she says good night and he runs to her and he says, I am here. Mm-hmm. We're always there. My mother is not with me. She's in India, but I feel her. She's with me. So I think that's what it sums out to be a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. That is for me.
And so Candace plays the character who is Catholic, and then she's looking eventually to find refuge in Buddhism. And so she's walking a similar path. So from the Western side, what you just said is very difficult for us, the attachments. And Peter and I talked about attachments earlier. And so how do you find dealing with attachments to this world, to family? So it would be an honor for you, you said, should your child be chosen as a priest. And I think you've got a different view than a Western person would, because you've got that Eastern view. So, yeah, talk a little about that.
It's just so, for me, coming from India, because I was born and raised and I came to live in the West, starting in Sweden about 12 years ago, I find the most detached people, families in the West. Mm-hmm. How do you explain that? So I think it has to do something from the time. And that's why sometimes I have that thing. How can you, maybe that's the reason why you try to attach, because you know that eventually everybody detaches. So in a sense, for me, that's a paradox. And in India, it's so funny because we are so detached and yet children live with their parents all their lives. Most of them, the sons don't move out of the house. Girls do, because they get married and they move out. But sons live with the parents all the time. And their children, if they're sons, they also live. So you would see in a household, in a typical Indian household, you will see 5-6 generations together living.
Yeah.
Yes, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing and growing and growing. So in one room, you'll see 5-6 people sleeping. So it's such a paradoxical thing. But then life is all about paradoxes. And that's where spiritual plays a big role.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Charlie's character talks about that, the father. He says, you know, you Westerners, you Americans, you know, you... Yeah, you have your preferences, you make your choices, and your parents just go to a nursing home when you can't deal with them anymore. And you think everything is a choice. But I think this show brings out a lot that, you know, we have to give our children permission to make their own choices, like
yes.
You said.
Yeah, because I think they leave home here, isn't it, at 18, if they go outside the city.
Yeah.
But even if they're city, they pretty much live their independent life. Mm-hmm. It's not the same in India. You still go home and eat meals with your parents.
And if your parents don't, parents don't ultimately, or they shouldn't ultimately not control their children's lives in a way.
Mm-hmm. And in this is a very special case because the child was identified and he learns. Mm-hmm. But I also understand that in the West, to let go is so hard. It is hard. It's a choice. It's a difficult choice. As a mother, it's a very difficult choice. But for me, because I'm a mother... Sometimes I feel that it's not a choice at all. Mm. It is destiny.
Mm. Wow.
So for me, I will end there. I will thank you so much for talking with
me.
And I wish I could continue.
thank you.
And so from a Western perspective, the idea that when the Buddha decided he was going to go live as an ascetic and go from home to homelessness and become a monk, he was able to give up the attachment to his wife and his son and his father and go off into the world. And I think Westerners have a lot of problem with that. We struggle. The idea of an attachment to our family wouldn't serve us. And so tell me about how you've, either with your experience in this show, which is very much about attachment, or in your personal life, like how that attachment comes up with you and how you live and in your religion. And
so I'll talk about the attachment that comes with parenting, which is a big theme, a big subject in the play. I was raised by refugees, Vietnamese refugees, who were trying to raise their son with their home traditions in a brand new land. And so this, my parents had an attachment to me in the way that they tried to control my actions. They tried to control the way I thought, and they constantly critiqued the way I lived. And I hated it, and I was strongly tried to detach myself from my parents my whole childhood, a lot, you know, because my parents made me feel like I wasn't good enough, and I wasn't worthy of their love, and if I didn't live the way that they wanted me to, then they wouldn't love me. And so now raising my own kids, I find that attachment still with the way that my parents raised me. Like, I'm still holding on to some sort of unfinished business or some anger or sadness about that. So I get triggered a lot, you know, when my kids act out or they do something where I would have never thought of doing, telling me to shut up or something like that. And I immediately want to control them, and I want to, you know, yell at them and tell them that they can't do that. That's disrespectful to me, you know, and I'm trying now to detach myself from that and not pose the way I was raised onto my children, you know, and really back up and shut my ego up and really say, is it really bad that he tells you to shut up? He doesn't really mean it. You know that he doesn't. So we can just go about our day and not make that a big deal, or I can make it a big deal because there's this stuff going on inside me. So when I think about detaching, that's like a constant thing for me in my parenting, trying to detach the way I was raised and trying to raise my kids in a new fashion.
So here's the big question. If given from where you are in your life, and you don't have kids, do you, Kenneth?
No.
So for you, pretend you do. And Peter, would you, in the shoes of the parents in the oldest boy, be able to send your boy to his destiny, whatever that may be? May it be, you know, suddenly he's a reincarnated llama. Could you do it?
Yeah, I mean, I really identify with father in that sense where, I mean, it's a huge honor. And it's like you birthed a celebrity. You know, and why would you get in the middle of his destiny and, you know, be able to understand what's going on and understand what that means to your religion? And the father says, like, he's like a prodigy, like a child prodigy who, if you don't cultivate their talent, they become crazy. And I believe that. I believe that. Would it be hard to, I mean, it'd be terrible. It'd be the hardest thing that you could ever do, but it's bigger than you. It's bigger than the bigger picture of you. I think it would be immensely selfish to get in the way of that. One thing the play doesn't come out and ask is, what does Tenzin want? Of course, he's 3 years old and can't really make decisions himself. Mm-hmm. But if you pay attention to during the play, he's all about it. I think that's what really turns her over, is that she recognizes how comfortable he is, how happy he is to be in India, and how this is truly what he wants. And I think that's the main thing you have to pay attention to. You know, I mean, if my child was completely against it, you know, and did not want to go, you know, I mean, I wouldn't want him to go then. If he was terrified and scared, I'm not going to make him do something that he may not be ready for or able to do even, you know? So I think when it comes down to it, it's what the child wants, you know? And I think parents forget about that a lot.
Yeah.
I don't have a kid, but I would personally be reluctant. Growing up here, I would probably just have like a special bond with my child, and I would be reluctant to give them up immediately, even if they had some sort of higher calling. If the child was happy, like where he was going, then I would be satisfied as well, but I would still keep in mind with that bond with my child or with anyone else who leaves, because anyone who I meet, they have some sort of imprint with me. I'll remember them in some way, and they'll affect my life in some way as well. And so I'll remember their tracks on how they imprinted my life.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate you. So this is The Oldest Boy. It's written by Sarah Rule and it's directed by Craig Bond. You still have 3 weeks to come and see the show. It's running Friday night, Saturday night at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday afternoon at 2:30. And the final performance is on October 23rd, 2016. You can get your tickets at www.vintagetheatre.com. Thank you. And come and see this gorgeous, moving, funny show. And we hope to all see you there. And thanks for tuning in.